The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Wednesday, August the 19th, and we are continuing what we are affectionately calling Nerd Week. It's really Analytics Week. I don't tell the people who are coming on that it's Nerd Week because then they might feel insulted, but I'm a nerd too. We're all nerds because we like football and we're smart about football. And one of the smartest football minds out there is joining us today, Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network, official title, NFL Network Analytics Expert. So, like, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, like, it's not pejorative to call people nerds, right? Anymore. I don't think it is.
I'm proud of being a nerd. I'm wearing chose to wear like a Northwestern shirt because I don't get to wear it really this season. So I had to pull it out somewhere. Like I should have put my glasses on. Like I should have really gotten a calculator out, you know, something.
Yeah. 82 rocking the old school cow. Yeah. But by the way, we should point out people don't know this because they didn't hear it before, but you do an incredible Michael Irvin impression. Can we hear it for the podcast?
Okay, sure. So,
Irv gives a big pump up speech for everybody on Sunday mornings before the pregame show.
He is our inspiration before the Sunday show starts. And I was saying, I don't know because he's going to be coming from his home. I don't know if we're going to get the same speech, but typically he walks in and he's like, praise that we're here. So thankful, so grateful to be here today. We've been blessed. Let's make it the best show ever. Like every single time. So
that's very good. That's a very good, like if you were picking up people in a lineup who would do good Michael Irvin impersonations, I don't know that you would necessarily be the number one draft pick, right? But you do a very good one.
I'm like that guy who you draft in the fourth round and like somehow gets you first round point. Like that's what it is about my impression. That's really all I got though.
But it's better than any impression I got. I try to do a British impression. It's like Scottish and I do a redneck North Carolinian accent. It's the same as my Jerry Jones accent. All the same. I've got a scattered ADD brain. It reminded me of something.
I do a good French person speaking English. That's my only other one.
Awesome. like sacré bleu.
No, you're like, are we going to go to the hotel today? The hotel, where
that's actually pretty good.
I know, right? You know,
Did you go to France and like speak in English a lot or what did the?
So I grew up in Luxembourg and a lot of people who were like trying to be nice to us who didn't speak at the time French, most of my, like I learned as a kid, but whatever, they would speak to us like that. So I thought that's how people spoke.
So. That's actually awesome. How long were you in Luxembourg? That's crazy.
During elementary school, I was there. Okay. So like it was a good time to be a kid. You know, you just get to go to Legoland, like all these crazy things like near there. It's good.
Yeah, that's you. Yeah, life. That sounds fantastic. I just grew up in High Point, North Carolina. We got a big chair, furniture capital of the world. We're not doing a very good job of analyzing football, but we can try. Anyway, follow Cynthia on Twitter at C Freeland and watch. I can't ever keep track. The NFL Network pregame show starts at like 4 a.m. Eastern time at this point, right? It's been backed up an hour each year over the past 10 years where it's now, you're just going to start at midnight. Is it 8 a.m. Eastern time? It's like 9 a.m. Eastern time,
but we are there earlier. So if you want us to start earlier, I can talk to some people and see if I can make that happen for you.
I mean, there's going to be a pregame show for the pregame show at some point. I believe
Why
that.
Why wouldn't there be?
Hey, they sell advertisements, whatever keeps us all employed. Okay. So one of the things that you do for NFL Network and NFL.com and the NFL really is to build a giant statistical model to project what football players will do. How did you, so like, I'm not going to claim that I get into like modeling, but like, I like to play fantasy golf. So I'll use Fantasy National. Is a site that you can take, and this is very basic level stuff. Like I'm like picking stats and then using sliders to determine percentages. But is that, that's kind of statistically modeling, right?
Absolutely. It's
okay.
It's really about, look, think of it like making cookies, right? There's okay. All these stats out there. Think of that as like the ingredients, like the flour and the sugar and whatever. And my recipe is like the, my proportion of flour to sugar to butter to whatever, right? Yours can be a little different from mine. And you never know, right? Like which one's right. Luckily with football, sometimes you get to be right. Sometimes you get to be wrong, but it's really about refining that recipe. So you keep trying it and fixing it and tweaking a little bit here, tweaking a little bit there, just so you get the right amount of the right blend of everything. And that's the model. So you're totally right. The sliders, okay. All those things.
Really okay. Good. So when you're looking, when you're trying to build, I'm just, because I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that most of the people who listen to this podcast are smarter than me, but I bet a lot of people don't do analytics. So when you're building out a model, how many different factors are going into it? I mean, are we talking like hundreds, tens, and is it long-term, short-term? I'm just curious about the variables for NFL, which is statistically just a lot more difficult to predict because it's a smaller sample size and, you know.
More variables.
Way more variables. And time. Random. Yeah, Like with golf, for instance, so this week coming up, they're playing on bent grass. Last week, they played on Bermuda. You know that certain guys putt better on bent grass than on Bermuda, and they like the you know, and different, the courses are set up in a statistical way. Now, random stuff will happen, but football, you like have insane amount of variables in terms of coaching, offensive line, and all of that. So what sort of things kind of factor in for you?
So the best way that I can simplify it is to say you take a historical reference. So sometimes 10 seasons is the right amount. Sometimes 15 seasons. It really depends. So the game shifts a little bit. So the sweet spot I found is somewhere between 8 and 10 seasons of data. So ultimately you take these past things, you input everything that you know, including coaches, coaching trees, because people tend to act like they're mentors where they were taught. And all of these different factors, you put in personnel, you look for, you know, things like, do you have a team where there's two running backs or do you have one lead back, right? Like you take all of the variables. Are they running outside zone? Are they mostly inside? What is the strategy? And you take what happened. So this is a strategy and this is what happened. And this is my historical reference model. Then you take a training set of data and you see, are these things correlated? So you do a lot of actual statistics to say, you know, is the R value high enough, right? Like, what are the different correlations? How much air do you have, et cetera? And then you find ranges that seem to be about correct. The way that it's different with football and the cheat sheet that I use, because you got to hack it. I'm a banker, not a statistician. A lot of these people are
right.
I come from banking. I want an answer so I can buy that stock now, right? I don't want to wait 6 months to make the model. So I phone a friend, right? I'll call a coach and I'll be like, what was the safety supposed to be doing here? Is that inside leverage or outside leverage? Like, I'll just ask, because if anyone claims they know what the coach called, they're a liar.
Right.
Coach.
Right. And even like I think, so Jeff Schwartz, who I love and, you know, has been on the podcast before and does a great job.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's a former professional offensive lineman and he's smart and he knows how to explain certain stuff, but he is still guessing. You know what I mean? Like, if you, and except on the Chiefs stuff, cause he can actually ask Mitchell.
Right. Phone a friend. Yeah.
Right. He can phone a friend. But yeah, unless you know exactly what the play call was, you can't know what assignments were. And because things happen. So like, let's say you have a left tackle who gets beat by an edge rusher, all of a sudden it changes up what we might see. And everybody sort of knows that, but that's really hard from a statistical standpoint to input, right?
Right. So the other thing that I've been able to do is, and again, this is where I got lucky. You know, like sometimes you pick the right, like you buy the Amazon stock because you're like, whatever, my kid's ordering off Amazon, whatever, you somehow find this thing early. Well, the thing I found a little bit early was computer vision. So what it looks like is kind of like a telestrator. Okay. And what that allows me to do is to draw circles and lines and squares, and it measures exact distances things are apart from each other. So even ahead of when the next gen stats have been using GPS data to, you know, to be able to coordinate that, I've been able to go back through historical film and be like, every time this corner is within 5 yards of this type of receiver or this route, then it's good. And that's where I've had the most, I'm going to use the word luck, but I've had the most luck being able to talk to coaches and understand, hey, is this what was intended? Because by the way, you can call a play and that doesn't mean someone's going to do it right.
Right.
Like the edge rusher could beat the left tackle, but it could look like it's the left tackle that's going to beat, but it was really a tight end's assignment. We don't know.
So- he didn't chip. And then all of a sudden it looks like the left tackle loses. So, I mean, and this makes a lot of sense. I mean, you have, by working at the NFL Network and the NFL, you have more resources than say like, you know, so there's Ben Baldwin works at the Athletic and they did like the R scrap project or whatever. And like, I don't know what the hell that is. And I've tried to look at it and I'm like, nah, you know what? I'm almost 40 years old. I'm not learning.
Old dog, no new tricks. Got it.
No, I'm down for new tricks, but I just don't know that like old dog is learning algebra. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that. I don't know, like learning to talk at this age. So, but I mean, I think like it definitely helps to have the resources of, you know, the NFL behind it. And obviously you've made great contacts and do great work. I'm not questioning it, but that helped.
The only reason my role now, it's all because of things I did in my career in like starting in 2008. So when I worked at the league office in finance, we were working on a project.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Fancy schmancy. That beast was paying off, right?
Yeah, there you go. It's
the journalism Northwest.
Yeah, it's like, I tricked you, suckers. I came in here and like it's a Trojan horse, a Northwestern Trojan horse of business and finance designed to sneak your way into becoming, getting into high stakes world of the media.
Well, really what happened was, is I worked on a project that was called Season Inventory Restructuring. So it was like, is 16-4 the optimal revenue configure? This is ahead of the last CBA negotiations, right? Okay. I'm an old dog. So CBA negotiated last time. Is it 16-4, 17-3? What's the optimal blend? And by the way, how do we value things like attracting new fans who maybe can only afford to come to a preseason game? So, you know, you have to write creative financial models based on that. Well, I got to sit with the competition committee, who's the coolest part of the NFL.
Sure.
And we sit with them. You get to eat snacks. They swear. It's a dark room where you watch film. And they actually appreciate when you ask a question because it's – and by the way, this is an advantage of being a woman. Nobody expected me to know where the safety
is. Sure. Right.
Right? So
it's like that time that Jordan Rodrigue asked Cam Newton about receivers. And he's like, what are you doing, lady? No, but I mean, by the way, there's like – and I guess if it's – so we're talking before the last CBA, but it's like peak Jeff Fisher competition committee, right? And like, I mean, it's kind of nerve wracking when they're watching film in that room. Like you pipe up and you say, if you say something stupid, they're going to be like, hey, look, what are we doing here?
I didn't. You know what? This is actually, it's kind of funny because when I was younger, had better metabolism. I still can eat pretty well, but like it's starting to catch up with me. But like before I could eat, like I could throw down like steak. Okay. Another dessert for middle of the day. Great. And so they kind of respected how much I could eat.
That's awesome. That girl from the finance committee can throw down some wings.
So no, for real. And so I kind of like, and then I was like, hey, this might be a stupid question, but why is the safety standing there? It looked like it should have been like, what is, cause I know enough about football. Sure. To ask, I wasn't just being like, which one is the quarterback?
Who's this quarterback? Yeah, right. Of course not. Yeah. But I mean, like that creates, so like being able to do that with a finance, like as part of that job where you would normally not be like, that is not a typical NBA experience. Right. Okay. And so by virtue of doing that, you build the base up. And that's what I was going to ask too. Like when you do the model, let's say you put in a bunch of stuff and it spits out that Reggie Bonifant is going to be the Panthers leading rusher. Like, you know what I mean? And what, like, and that's an extreme, obviously, but
right. The model is broken. So right. Here's a more relevant example. you try to find things, you want to be unbiased. The best part about analytics is the lack of bias. Like, I can't look at, like, maybe I like Saquon Barkley more than Ezekiel for whatever reason. I went to Penn State or Big Ten and I don't like Ohio State because I'm from the state of Michigan, whatever. Who knows? Right. Like, I don't want to be biased. Right. So the best part is when it spits out correlations or nonsense, like, third down is correlated to, the wind speed of prior to a kick. That stuff's not, like, you have to go through and the eye test has to match, like, what the math is, right? So you got to ask you have to have your phone of friends. And by the way, there's lots of different models and they're not all named after old school rappers because, again, I'm old and I like to pay homage to that.
What is your model name? I don't think we.
Oh, there's tons. So okay.
You name them all after old school rappers?
Mm-hmm. Like, EZE has been my low key favorite one, but Q-Tip, Q-Tip, that one's been working really well. Most of the stuff that my game score ones, that's Biggie because I'm big ups to Brooklyn. That's I don't know. And so we've got two.
Is Amy Trask aware of your model being named EZE? By the way, if not, you should DM her.
I should tell her. I'll definitely tell her.
Yeah. So wait, all right. So when you say the different models, so Q-Tip versus EZE, are they both going to the same goal with different inputs? Is that what you mean? Or are they just for different, totally different things?
Totally different things. One is player production. Other is schematic. They all work together because think of it like how you would value stocks in the stock market, right? Like, you kind of have to have a different model for tech stocks than you do for car stocks. They run on different fundamentals. There are just different things that drive each one, right? So here it's there's draft ones. There's, college transitioning to.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right.
There's just lots of different ways to kind of look at it. So ultimately you got to have some different models to figure out the different ways. And then, by the way, if you want to do a really good job and this is my OCD coming in, you also have to have the model that's totally AI, which is I set up the parameters and then I have it look for its own. Clusters of information, and that's actually super fast. That's where, but that's sometimes where third down's related to wind speed or whatever. You're like, no, that's not.
No, computer, that is not how football works.
Right.
Interesting.
But you have to have something that's unbiased so that you can keep getting to, because you can think something and you could, I know I have this big theory on why I'm drafting Baker Mayfield, why I'm waiting and in a draft Baker Mayfield because I think I'm gonna beat everyone with Baker Mayfield. And I could sell myself really hard on that, but what if he sucks? What if he can't execute?
Well, this is literally my next question.
Perfect.
So great segue. I mean, all right, let's take the Browns as a specific example. So this is a pandemic offseason that has to make things, I assume, harder.
Yes.
And so my working theory, and I'm not alone on this, but that teams with head coach, quarterback, offensive coordinator, and offensive line consistency are going to be better, especially in the first probably 4 to 8 weeks of the season. Okay, there we go.
Wow,
I'm living in a simulation. I'm a model. I didn't know it. I think the first 4 weeks of the season, teams, especially offensive line and quarterbacks, I don't know what to do with the Browns because I agree with you. I really like Kevin Stefanski. I think he applies analytics to football. I think he's going to do the opposite of what Freddie Kitchens did, which was try to reinvent the wheel by combining the air raid and whatever else in Baker's, the spread and the air raid. What are you doing? You don't need a new offense. Somebody would have combined them already if it was that good an idea. And I think Stefanski's going to get back to basics and run. Bill Barnwell said this yesterday on the show, I believe. He thinks we'll see a lot of outside zone. And I think we're going to see some RPOs, maybe later on in the season, but a lot of bootlegs and play action.
All play action. Look what he did with Kirk Cousins.
Right. And it is very obvious. Kirk Cousins, if you look at, you don't need to, I mean, you don't need an MBA from Northwestern to figure this out. You need a Sports Info Solution login and you can plug it in and see that Kirk Cousins is great on play action. So why not play to his strengths? How do you model the Browns in this offseason where we might like them a little bit more in a normal offseason? And does that theory hold water with the consistency? And I guess, what do you think about the Browns? That's three questions that could have been asked better. Sorry.
The first, I'm going out of order, but the first one is
Welcome to the podcast.
Whatever. I've got the good ADD too. Functional ADD. So my premise is that teams with more continuity, especially at key positions, they're going to be better off. Doesn't matter, right? Like the more if you have and older players too, right? Like if they're all rookies or super young, that could not be as good.
The Panthers defense is going to suck. It's just going to suck. There's no way it won't.
Which helps Christian McCaffrey's fantasy value. So it works out. But ultimately, look, it's continuity. Like the Chiefs are in a great spot. Their secondary is a little bit dicey, but every other piece is fine. And then the new piece, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because of Damian Williams opting out, like running backs have a shorter learning curve historically, especially running backs that come from offenses that take X amount of snaps, of which LSU took beyond X amount of snaps. So things like that, running backs are quicker to learn, pass rushers, quicker to learn things like corners and safeties. They tend to be a little longer. Linebackers who play primarily in coverage, longer learning curve. Like tackles are and tight ends, depending on how they're used, blocking schemes take a bit longer to learn. Inside, you know, guards and centers, they tend to go a little bit faster. Those are the historical tendencies.
A lot of that is just like see ball, tackle ball. I mean, like if you're being aggressive and just an easier responsibility, that typically speaking, you're gonna have less. I think that Clyde Edwards-Helaire thing is really interesting. So. More is it like you see a correlation between running back success and snaps the previous year or full college snaps or what is it?
So I do it as number of snaps. So like if you kind of break down, you got to go outside, inside, and then pass catches, like just let's make it four or five things, right? Okay. And then do it like a resume. How many times have they done it? And then how many times have they been successful with it? Because sometimes a lot of volume can be to your detriment, can be bad. Right. Remember, like everyone thought Derrick Henry was going to have no tread on the tires left because he played like a bajillion snaps. They didn't play a very complex offense though at Alabama. So how many different looks, how many different, pass situations is the running back in? Because then they're typically asked to block. How often do they block? These types of things, those all project for how quickly they'll transition to the game that they're in. I remember depends on the use. You go to Andy Reid, you need to be able to catch passes. You got to be able to run inside, outside, any sort of scheme. And by the way, you have to be able to handle that Patrick Mahomes is going to make decisions that fast, which everyone does, right? So it's the resume match is a really nice fit. So it goes fast. Like Jonathan Taylor's another one who's a good resume match. He might not be great like fantasy pick, but like, he's going to have his, because of the Wisconsin, what he did at Wisconsin, it matches what's likely.
It's almost identical to what they want to do in Indianapolis. And he has Marlon Mack there, so he's not going to be asked to do everything right away.
He's not going to be asked to do the thing that's not his thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not right away. So
he's not a good pass catcher either, by the way. And they have Nyheim Hines too. Like they're not going to ask. He is a good pass catcher. They just didn't use him in Wisconsin. And like Paul Chris tried to use him more his senior year his junior year to help him get ready for the NFL, but they're not going to throw him out there. It's like, hey, buddy, you're on third down every time. Better pass block and catch passes. Like they won't do that.
Right. And they don't need to, which is great because then he'll be able to earn those. He'll be able to start seeing the vision and figuring it out. Right. And like, remember, defense is a process of elimination game. So defense will look at the offense and they'll be like, it can't be X or Y. And then, don't use X or Y because those are receivers. It can't be thing one, thing two, right? Then they'll see a little pre-snap motion or not. Oh, it can't be whatever. So defense really has a big advantage. Like the Steelers have a big advantage in the first few weeks because their defense is just nasty. Yeah. So that's helpful for them. And they're all coming back, relatively all coming back. And especially like, you already got that Minkah Fitzpatrick getting acclimated to their system. So those are big advantages for teams with really good defenses. So that leads me back to the Browns.
Yes.
Which was really your question.
Good job. I was like, what were we talking about?
Where were we? No, yeah. I think the thing about Baker Mayfield is if you go to see where he has had success, when he was kept clean last season, he played significantly better than when he was under pressure. He was always under pressure. When they did a lot of calling the same play over and over again, which that strategy, that's been one of the things this offseason, this COVID that I spent a lot of time on is what happens when you call the same play twice? And because it either works really well, see 49ers, or it works really bad, like see Browns.
But the difference with the, and you're 100% right, because I like when I play Madden, I do this. I'm like, oh, that play worked. I'm gonna run it again. But defense is like you said, they work on process of elimination. Well, they also key in on certain like visual things.
Right.
And the 49ers, the whole point is that like everything looks the same, and it might be a similar. Right. But it might be George Kittle leaking out on play action, but it actually looks like an outside zone run or something like that. Whereas the Browns were literally just running same plays over and over again.
Yep. It's like, we got this one.
Yeah. Freddie's like, that worked. Hey, let's dial that thing up again. And the defense is like, this guy, are you kidding me? They're running the same play. And because the defense just snuffed that stuff out like that.
Especially their red zone play. It's like they only had 4 red zone plays. You know, you're like, yeah. Didn't you just do that? Whatever. So I think the Browns this year, I think that the thing about, I'm a more of a Baker Mayfield believer than like most. And I'm in, and cause I've seen him do really great things. And if you go back to kind of what worked with when Freddie Kitchens first took over, and then if you go back to what worked when he was in college, he's really good at play action. He's got a great arm. It's, yep. And the thing about their running backs is they'll provide him with that look that keeps defenses honest. So they improved their O-line, really like adding their right tackle, Jack Conklin. I think they're significantly improved their capacity to, because Conklin's a vet, and obviously Conklin knows how to block for a runner, see Derrick Henry. So, you know, these are things that kind of translate well. And I don't think Baker Mayfield's going to be throwing for 300 yards a game, like at least not in the beginning, but I don't think he's going to have to, because the balance that you're going to see with like a Nick Chubb and like Kareem Hunt, by the way, what we don't have to talk about, I feel like no one's talking about him at all.
Kareem Hunt or Nick Chubb?
Kareem Hunt. Chubb, yep. And then Hunt, like sneaky, they're going to use him. So
I mean, he led the league in rushing 3 years ago. Now his off-field stuff, not ideal, but I mean, from a football perspective, yeah, I was on Cleveland radio like a week ago or at some point, and with Dustin Fox and Adam the Bull, and they asked me like, who is there anybody in the NFL that has a better skill position group than the Cleveland Browns? And I don't know that there is. Like Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, Austin Hooper, and David Njoku. That's sick. Like that's really good.
Yeah. And what I think Stefanski will do, like, I don't think Kirk Cousins is more than an average quarterback, and maybe slightly better than average quarterback, but what he was able to, I mean, 14 touchdowns using play action. That's a lot of touchdowns using play action. That's the most in the league last season.
Yeah.
Efficiency, you know, I had like a over 104 passer rating using play action. And, you know, I'm not saying Kirk Cousins is bad. I'm just saying he's not great, right? Like he's not up there with the guys.
He is a scalable quarterback with the right weapons and the proper scheme. He's a rich man's Andy Dalton.
Exactly.
And just as a statistical point, this is what people who just dump on Baker. All right. So 64.1, 68.1, 70.9, 70.5, 63.8, and 59.4. There's one very obvious outlier there. And I mean, he is not an inaccurate quarterback. He's just not. He was the all-time completion percentage leader in college football when he left Oklahoma. And he has tons of like a work of body to back it up. Like his resume is extensive. This is not a guy who's just going to suddenly flame out.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you. And my other, like my last point about Baker is I think that I don't mind the swagger. I don't mind the like feeling dangerous, whatever. Like I don't mind any of that, but I do think that, you know, once he gets a little, I think it's kind of like he got to get his mojo back a little bit. Like,
yeah,
you know, like once he gets that mojo, we could see like on fire Baker easily. And I'm a little, I'm their secondary is a little suspect to me as well. So I'm like, all right, well, what are we going to get from the, so perhaps you'll have, you know, they've got a good pass rush up front, but like maybe he'll have to throw for 300 yards like later in the season. And my fantasy, like whatever I've convinced myself up will turn out.
Okay. All right. And by the other thing Baker didn't do, I like to call it like the GQ/Mina Kimes interview. Like he didn't do that this offseason. That's good. Let somebody else do it. It doesn't work out. And Mina's great. And GQ is a fantastic magazine. But if you're doing those interviews, there's going to be a target on your back.
GQ, if you want to do this interview, because I'll be coming to you from live from my living room, so the target will be hard to get.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I don't know that, like, GQ's like, listen, man, we've seen the setup back there. You got a garden gnome and an NC State helmet. Nobody's doing this. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And we come back, maybe Baker Mayfield could be a sleeper for most passing yards in the NFL.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, so in your model, you created, and this is up on NFL.com right now. It was posted like the last couple of weeks, I think. Yeah, like late July. And you broke down. Oh no, that was the Browns. Excuse me. I screwed that up. I looked at the wrong thing. When did the projections come out? I'll look it up.
You know, so it's great. Like a week ago.
I was like, I thought it was sooner than that.
It was recent.
Okay. So you wrote about the Browns Cowboys set to thrive with the new offensive mind. That was really interesting. I've been banned by listeners to talk about the Cowboys or the Eagles anymore.
Why?
They're tired of them. But I want to ask you about the point about before we're going to ask the Cowboys anyway. Then we'll get the stats.
Yeah.
So on here, you included in the model something related to like basically the conservative nature of Jason Garrett versus Mike McCarthy. And it's been referenced some on the pod, but just how stark is the difference there?
So it's the thing that's, Jason Garrett person. I think the thing that's really great about Jason Garrett is especially if you have, like, for Daniel Jones and the Giants, it's a really big positive.
He did a really good job developing Dak, as much as everybody, myself included, liked to kill him for the clapping and the losing the close games and the field goals. Yeah. All that, like, Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback and he was a late round pick that Jason Garrett developed.
Yeah, so, and if you look at to see how that happened, it was like, let's lean on the things we've got. Like, Dak Prescott didn't attempt a deep pass outside the numbers until, like, I don't know, I want to say like 8 games of starting. So he created a path for Dak to be able to ease into it, which is honestly like one of the best things that you can ask for, especially we saw how accurate Daniel Jones was when he had time to throw last season. So.
Sure.
These are great. So I'm not saying it's going to be good for them. That's where they are right now. But it's kind of like they kind of outgrew what was being asked of them, right? Because Jason Garrett, really what happened was is you kind of have this equity, obviously with this great O-line and you have this great running back and you have these receivers and you're kind of putting them in heavy sets that reflect a more kind of traditional 90s style football.
He's Nick Saban's old OC. Like the dude, I mean, he's not a modern play caller.
Right. And you have a modern team. I mean, Amari Cooper, you go out and get him and then he kind of don't optimize for him. Right. So what we've seen from Mike McCarthy, I mean, I don't know the exact, I can't remember the exact rankings, but I don't think he ever ranked within the outside the top, like number three in terms of calling plays and with three or four receiver personnel. So, yeah. You know, 11 personnel, the most common personnel, but the number of times he did it was just so much higher and spreading out the most wet West Coast spread offense. And you saw, you know, obviously to accommodate Aaron Rodgers, you've seen he's pretty good. You've seen those things kind of work. So it's less about, I wouldn't say it's about taking risks that weren't calculated, because I think McCarthy takes smart risks. I think it's about optimizing the play call for the personnel.
Sure.
And I think Jason Garrett was a little conservative, especially in the red area with, and he wasn't even really calling the plays. It was like his system. And then they all follow a system. Do you know what I mean? Like he wasn't on the headset being like,
you've never seen Jason. And again, you never seen Ryan Wilson on this podcast points out. You've never seen him say a word into the headset. He never talks.
I think the last time he called the play, and I don't know if I'm supposed to tell this, but whatever. I think it was like not recent. Like, I think it was before I worked at the NFL that he directly called. It's his system, his
principle. Like when he was like on the sideline with Nick Saban. No, he would have called a play when he was working for, when he was under Wade Phillips, right? When he was the OC.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. He definitely, but I don't know.
Like 2009.
Right. Like I said, it's right around when I worked at the league office, like when I was starting like eight, sure. Nine, something like that. Yeah. Right. So,
but that's okay because he's the head coach. Like you don't have to call the plays as the head coach.
That's their prerogative, right? So It's their system and whatever. And they're very true to their system. And you have to give credit to the people who are, you know, executing. It's kind of like the military, right? Like he has a military background, right? Like, you know, you're chain of command. And so it's just modern football is a bit more fluid.
Yeah. No, you want to be different. And McCarthy's going to call his plays. No, I mean, you get Jason Garrett has a good, I can't believe I'm propping up for Jason Garrett. I'm sort of backing down here. But I do think that he gets a bit of a raw deal, and it is like a running gag. Like we like to pick the people we make jokes about and do that. We did it with Blake Bortles, with Jason Garrett, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so that's actually interesting for Daniel Jones. You think he maybe low interception rate, probably cut down on his fumbles, ask him to make easier throws, utilize the personnel, run Saquon Barkley a bunch.
I thought until the opt-outs happened, I was on board. But now
with Nate Solder gone,
that's a really big loss.
Yeah.
Because you're asking a very non-season. Now you have two rookies, one who was not very highly drafted. And so that's a little dicey for me. So I think they're going to be okay. But I would have been happier had we seen Nate Solder. I would have had a little more faith in it.
I'm with you completely. Okay. So to the point about the passing numbers. Now, Patrick Mahomes, your model cranked out that Patrick Mahomes is most likely to have, the highest number of passing yards in the NFL this year. It's a very, I think I read in the rundown, it's like very obvious, but it's a good choice. Like, why would you go with anybody else? The defense right. might not be great. He's the best football player in the world.
They pass the ball a lot, even if those short passes, that are really running back production.
Yeah, little 1 yard flip things.
Still counts.
Yeah, right. It makes total sense. Who would be a sleeper? I don't know if you can say this since you work for the NFL, but do you look at like Vegas odds is that any part of your model at all?
You know, I don't look at anything that is not in my contract. You know, that word doesn't exist, but.
Okay, sorry. Don't even answer the question.
Wait. But if you ask me certain benchmarks, like for example, do I think Philip Rivers is going to throw for more than 1,100 yards? My answer is yes, or yes. Whatever. Not 1,100.
Right.
What is it? 3,100 yards? The answer is yes.
Okay.
You know, if you ask me certain benchmarks, I can tell you any benchmark. The model can tell you the probability of.
Can tell you whether it's more or less than a certain number.
Yeah, like will Ryan Tannehill throw for 22 touchdowns? My model says he will.
Oh, really? That's a lot. Wow. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So who would be a sleeper to lead the league in passing? Like when you saw the output, you're like, whoa, all right now. Like who were you surprised to see at the top of the list?
Maybe not surprised because I think he's kind of perennially underrated, but Matt Ryan was surprising to me to be a smart choice for potentially leading the lead in it. And I mean, Dak Prescott, but that doesn't seem that surprising to me. That one seemed a little bit like,
I mean, I think that I mean, well, the thing with those two is that they are on teams that are going to pass the ball a ton and don't look like they're going to have very good defenses.
That's and then so that the last one there would be Tom Brady, which the kind of
that would be surprising.
That one was the most surprising of the not so. I mean, it's the same model, right? Like the Bucs have a good front of their defense, and Todd Bowles is a master, but their secondary is super young, and I think the game flow will have to. Their people are gonna have to pass on them. So I think Tom Brady and I don't understand about Rojo. I'm not sure what to make of their running backs there in Tampa. So that's one that could be your little potential. Wow, sneaky pick.
I'm looking to see. Ah, interesting. Now, I will say that Tom Brady is not likely to be up there. I'm surprised to see the guy I kind of like.
Say whatever you want about that place.
Tom Brady's 8-1 to lead the league in passing, which is pretty good value. Patrick Mahomes is 4.5-1. Matt Ryan 7-1. Dak Prescott 7-1. Baker Mayfield and Carson Wentz are interesting to me. Kyler Murray is kind of interesting.
Oh, I love I'm all in on Kyler Murray. Like anyone who's going to play fantasy with me, by the way, I don't know who else you're having on this nerd week, but I'm organizing trying to make other NFL teams nerds play with me in a fantasy league this year. Cause that's what I need, another fantasy team. But,
how many fantasy leagues do you have?
Ugh, like way too many. Like
7, 12.
Right now I'm at 5, which is okay. Five. Max. So, but I'd be willing to do 6 for this one, but I'm all in. And then like, they're all going to, they listen in, they'll steal my Kyler Murray. Like,
are you trying to get like other nerds from the media or other nerds from like the stat nerd from each team?
From each team.
Oh. So do you guys have like an analytical like tech group text?
Yes.
You really? That's amazing. Okay. There are surprisingly like, The people who do the stuff, like I follow some on Twitter, like they're out there, but they don't really tweet about football. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're not, like, I mean, I think maybe they have to keep it in house. I don't know exactly how that works, but
we actually spend a lot of time. So golf, you brought it up earlier. They give you like this dearth of like amazing stats, like on PGA.com. Like, they will tell you everything that you want to know. So lately we've all been talking a little trash about golf because I may or may not. Listen, I'm touchdown dancing here because I won. I beat all the other losers. It was all about, all I had to do was look at whose college course it was. And, you know, thanks, Colin. Appreciate you. So
all the local guys did really well. Although like Xander ended up having a decent day because he was out there, but Morikawa. So you guys did like a major.
I'm like, thanks, Colin. No, we're on a first name basis now. That's what I've decided.
Jim Nance said it's Colin. Tiger, Jack, Colin.
That's what I'm going with. I know. Yeah, I listen to Jim Nance. Like, what am I going to do? So, but that was really what put me over the top. I was really happy about that.
That's awesome. That's actually, I mean, look, course familiarity matters. Okay. So what about Matthew Stafford? Oh, no, wait, sorry. No, tell me about Kyler Murray. What am I? Oh, I swear to God, I can see a squirrel. Yeah. And I'm like, whoa, look, a squirrel.
That's my life. Welcome. Kyler Murray, I think that whole Arizona offense is going to be really fun to watch. I think sneaky potential for playoffs, which sounds ridiculous, but.
No, I'm in on the playoffs for Cardinals.
I think they're going to be very good this season. And I think, you know, we can talk as much as we want about like Jamal Adams and, you know, the Seahawks and Russell Wilson and that amazing video he made. But I think when it comes down to it, I don't know if they have enough playmakers and their defense, like who's going to be pass rush? You can ask Jamal Adams.
I mean, even if they get Clowney back, he's not like, he doesn't pile up sacks and he's a great defensive player, but they don't have an edge presence. So, I mean, that was the one thing about the Legion of Boom is that, as good as they were on the secondary, they signed Michael Bennett, they signed Cliff Averill on the cheap, and that's how they bolstered that secondary by having an upfront presence that could rush the passer. I don't know that without that they can be as good as they want. You can't, in the 2020, run the football a ton and not have an elite defense. Like, it's just not going to work.
It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work. So I think that Cardinals have like a really good chance to be able to do some damage just with their offense alone.
You think they are probably likely to win more than say 7 games?
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. I think 7 is very conservative.
Oh, okay.
Assuming we play 16.
Right. Well, that seven is only relevant for 16 games.
Right, right. So I think that's a, I think that's a very conservative estimate. I think nine would be something where I'd be like, the nine's more like it. I think.
Okay. Okay. All right. Now we're talking. Could Kyler Murray lead the league in passing?
He absolutely could. The only reason that I don't think he will is my other fantasy like favorite, which is Kenyon Drake. And I think Drake, you saw him be just totally effective. They figured out how to use him. It was all about, he handles that quick pace so well. Right. They didn't use him like that in Miami. So him coming over to Arizona, the use just totally went, like he just became like, oh, this is how we're supposed to use this piece. This is what he does. So I think Kenyon Drake, like that's the one who could probably win your fantasy league because I don't think people will be drafting him high enough. You can probably get him in the second round of your like draft.
Early second round, yeah. Although I think now he's like moved up ahead of Chubb in a lot of draft.
I hope that by the time I draft, that's not the case. I want Drake.
Drake's a stud. He's a stud. I think he's great. But like it doesn't work. I think people will be a little hesitant to buy in. A, there's a little hype around the Cardinals, and B, you know, Drake came over midseason. So you're projecting. I'm saying that's why you can get a discount. I agree with that. I think he's a great player. Yeah. Would you take him?
This is going to be a big step forward for Kyler Murray too. Like I think it's going to be, I think he ends up top eight amongst quarterbacks in fantasy.
Okay. I think he'd be number one. I legitimately believe that. Like I really do.
He could easily be that. I mean, the only reason for me not thinking so is like the division that they play in is a little less pass happy than some of the other. Their sure. schedule is a little less pass like meaning the other teams, right? So the other teams rely on the run a bit more, like San Francisco. So that's two games where he's not going to necessarily need 300 passing yards to win.
Right.
That's my thought. You know.
So he could, in other words, he could take a big step forward as a player.
Oh,
and maybe the stats don't necessarily.
I think that's will, but like not, I don't know if they go for number one, but like, I think again, totally draftable.
If he played the Falcons 16 times, he would lead the league in pay. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's,
exactly.
You don't get to do that, right? You have to play good defenses multiple times in that division. Exactly. You have Jalen Ramsey, Richard Sherman, and Jamal Adams.
Right.
Okay. So I had a, can you, you're just leading me to another question. Make it much easier. Perfect. Le'Veon Bell projected really well for you. It's a little surprising, right?
Kind of, but also kind of not. Like the first reason the Jets really didn't address. Okay, so Denzel Mims, who may or may not be injured as of the time we're talking about this, who's going to catch passes for them? Like, how many times can you go to Jameson Crowder? Because
I mean, a lot. You're like 110, but you're going to end up with 800 yards,
right? Or like 8 yards, right? Like Jarvis Landry in the days of Miami when Adam Gase was play calling. It was like, did he even get you a positive yard or do you have to take the negative despite the catch? And that's one for the PPR, but minus what, whatever. So, right. You know, like I think that Lev Bell will outperform where people are projecting him. I think people are like kind of out on him and they're like, oh, he's really good.
He's being lumped with like David Johnson.
Great. And, I'll take Lev Bell every day.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, that's where I think the using the passing game and also they have Frank Gore and you forget or don't forget or depend. I don't know what people think of that, but Frank Gore is
older than you and me combined.
Yes. And so ultimately they're going to have now that guy who, you know, gets the forward progress with the on the ground, not this whole turn back and forth thing, which has worked for Lev Bell in the past. But, you know, and I think also with a full game of Sam Darnold or full season of Sam Darnold, presumably healthy, right? Like mono probably not going to be the thing this year. Let's hope.
He get it twice. I don't know.
If he gets mono twice, like that's the funniest thing ever.
If he gets mono twice, your colleague Kyle Brandt better not name check me for talking about my mono on NFL Network when I never had mono, nor did I even mention mono. I wake up in the morning, I'm watching TV in my living room, and I hear Kyle Brandt's like, Andrew Perloff and Will Brinson won't shut up about their mono. I'm like, I didn't, like, what is happening? Like, the whole world thinks I got to get text. People thought I got mono.
I had mono in college.
A lot of people had mono. Mm-hmm. It's a cool, you're like, yeah, I had mono. Don't worry about it.
It's not cool. It was not cool. I wasn't even like, you're supposed to be kissing people for it. I wasn't even kissing people for it. I just,
oh no,
that's with a bunch of people. It wasn't even a good story. I just got mono.
It's, can't even humble brag about having mono. Okay. So rookies who might perform well, Michael Pittman and Henry Ruggs pop for you. What led to them being so high in terms of your model?
It really was opportunity, right? Like if you look to see with Pittman, it's, you know, you've got Philip Rivers who knows how to slang it, and then you've got T.Y. Hilton who sometimes he's not healthy, and we've seen that. And you see his height and the way that Philip Rivers has worked with receivers who profile to run the routes that he is going to route. So run, then that's a good fantasy number. It's not a top, like, you're not going to draft him, you know, in the top two rounds or whatever, but, like, you know, it's someone to consider, especially for your dynasty leagues where you can keep them for years.
Okay, so sorry, not to interrupt, but, like, with dynasty, how do you model out the longer term? Like, what sort of inputs? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, do you think there's a wide variance between who you would take over the long haul? Cause personally, I would take, so for 2020, I would rather have probably Henry Ruggs than CeeDee Lamb, but for the next 10 years, I think CeeDee Lamb is the best receiver in this class. So I just curious how that projects for you differently.
So it really, to me, it really just comes down to some forecast for continuity. Like Pittman, you don't know who his quarterback is going to be.
Gotcha.
So that introduces a large unknown. You know, it's one of those things where what you could do is you could take him in the later round and then see what nets out the quarterback position and then decide.
Later. It just increases the scale of probability. Basically.
It just makes the variance just way bigger, right? Like Jerry Jeudy could end up CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, or Henry Ruggs are one of the three best receivers, right? We don't know which one, right? Yeah. And you're discounting Jerry Jeudy because Drew Lock doesn't seem to be the type of quarterback that's like going to have this kind of storied like future. Same right. thing, Henry Ruggs. Like, we were hearing things that Gruden loves Mariota. I don't know if I believe that, but
now the latest buzz is that Gruden really loves Derek Carr.
Sure, and then tomorrow
on NFL Network. I don't know who said it.
Perfect. And there's that receiver from, Edwards from South Carolina. They pretend they love him now too. I saw a report that. Believe any of that yet. So my question, that's why to me, CeeDee Lamb becomes the guy for your dynasty league that you really target because.
You know Dak is going to be there. Like, they're going to figure out a way to get Dak in at some point. They're going to pay him. It's going to happen. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it's really about certainty, right? Like, there are some things that are really uncertain, like quarterbacks in, you know, both in Indianapolas and in
Las and Denver for different reasons and Las Vegas for a number of different reasons. One's guy got to go babysit 9 kids. The other guy might get benched for Marcus Mariota. The other guy has started 5 games in his career. Like, there's a lot of uncertainty, whereas Dak will at some point be signed to a long-term deal because the Cowboys aren't presumably morons. Presumably.
I mean, I don't think they are. I'm going to say they're not morons.
No.
They've got some good players. They managed to, like, pay for all of them.
Yeah. Except Byron Jones. They didn't pay for Byron
it's
Jones.
It's really easy to win with the good players. It's easier to win with the good players. Not really easy to win, but it's easier to win when you got the good players.
Don't need a model to tell you. Don't need a model to tell you that.
Model says.
yeah. So, all right. So last one. Did any other rookies stand out when you were
trying to think?
It's a loaded class.
It's a great class.
Yeah.
DeAndre Swift, who plays in Detroit. That's one that I might be like, if you get Kerryon Johnson, you're for sure handcuffing with him because Kerryon Johnson has had some injury concerns, but right. I think they might like Swift more than they like Johnson.
I would agree with you because they just drafted you follow the money and follow the draft pick. Now, granted, both guys came from the SEC and were drafted in the second round by the same GM and coach. But if you draft one guy in the second round and it doesn't work out and then you dip your toe back in, it probably means you like the other guy better. I like Swift too. There's Georgia running backs. Something about him. They're explosive.
Something about them. Just need to stay healthy.
I know. So Alvin Kamara, I think he had as like the most touchdowns, scoring the most touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And then Cam Jordan had the most sacks. How high are you on the Saints then this year?
I'm very high on the Saints. I think that division is going to be, you know, even the Panthers who have more of like running back, obviously Christian McCaffrey's running back, but like, I think the amount of passes that are going to happen in that division, remember they play each other twice, is just ridiculous. So I think that's part of why everyone from the NFC South faced more passes in my model have them facing more passes. So that's why Cam Jordan had more of an opportunity to rush the passer than other.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. Actually makes sense.
Who are similarly situated. And then, you know, and then on the other side of
every single quarterback in that division is going to throw 600 passes, maybe.
I mean, if it's not that, it's close, right? Yeah, like
500 to 600 minimum, I would think, because the Falcons have no defense. I mean, the Panthers have an even worse defense. those teams would both be thrown from behind and they can score with the passing attacks. And I mean, Breeze and Peyton like to melt the clock by throwing the ball, and Tom Brady, they don't have a running game in Tampa.
Yeah. And their defense is suspect too. So I just think there's going to be so that whole division is the passing division for me. And because of that, then you're going to get more opportunities and you're also going to get more. I think it's going to be a higher score. Like if you're going to look at the average scores of games for those teams and points allowed for the, for many of those teams sure. too. That's why I think you're going to have, you know, that it's like, why did Patrick Mahomes throw for 50 touchdowns? Because they had to,
they
you
had know, like bad defense.
You obviously don't want him in that situation, you know, like unless it'd be, I guess it'd be fun to win like 41-0, but like, it's very unlikely that that happens. Right. So it's really about like the configuration that allows for that to happen. And I think Cam Jordan's in this great spot. The secondary got better, but I think they're going to up front. He's just going to face more passes. So I was actually that one. I love Cam Jordan like as a human, but that one surprised me.
Because, he's very entertaining.
Oh, he's so entertaining. I wasn't expecting it to be him, like at all.
I wouldn't have thought that either. So I'm going to see if I can find. Sorry, I should have had this eyes in front of me. I think Cam Jordan, I was looking at, because I think Myles Garrett is my pick to win Defensive Player of the Year. But I would think that you could find some decent value. William Hill is not being cooperative. Sorry. I think that
the Myles Garrett one, I thought it was going to be Myles Garrett too, but now you got to remember. They play the Ravens twice. You know who runs the ball a lot? The Ravens. You know, yeah. Like it's about opportunity, right? Like sometimes you can be the best player in the league and not lead the league in sacks.
Sure. They play the Browns. They play the Bengals, who should be throwing the ball.
What they're doing.
The Steelers are probably going to avoid trying to get Ben Roethlisberger sacked. So all right, here we have Cam Jordan 40-1 to win Defensive Player of the Year. If he showed, and here's the thing about Cam Jordan that's interesting is like, cause 2011 draftee didn't get his due until like really like the last 3 or 4 years, and his performance has increased exponentially and people are really taking notice of what he's doing. If he comes out and leads the league in sacks in 2020 and the Saints win 13 games again, it's pretty good. I think he's going to have a little juice for Defensive Player of the Year.
I like it. I think it's worth it. And I was looking at like in my head, I do think, though, a good – what's the market for Nick Bosa?
So Nick Bosa is actually ahead of his brother, 9-1 for Nick Bosa.
I have him ahead of his brother, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, is that – now, I guess both teams are going to be run – the Chargers are going to be so run-heavy and so defensively – like, I think you're going to look at low, low snap counts for the Chargers this year. I don't know how you can take – I don't know how you can like bank on any production from that offense. I mean, what did Tyrod Taylor have in 2015? Like 3,300 passing yards for the Bills, and he played. I mean, they're just not going to be an up-tempo offense. It's not what Anthony Lynn wants.
And nor should it be, because they got to figure out how to like slowly fold everything in. But the other part is with Melvin Ingram's uncertainty. If he misses even one game, that screws.
As Greg Rosenthal pointed out, a hold in. Not a hold out. He's at training camp, but he's not practicing. It's a hold in.
I love Greg. Like, I almost can't be on a show with Greg because, like, even just his, like, snarky little, like a look he can make, and I will be in tears laughing because, like,
he's very, so, very low key funny.
Oh,
this is so dry.
Like, I've been crying laughing so hard. I was crying because.
Yeah. Yeah, Greg's.
So
Greg is high up there in 2G Greg power rankings.
I mean,
he's definitely above Greg Williams.
Greg Williams is a wild card. You never know what to expect from that guy.
Well, Greg Williams looks to me like the whole Bounty Gate thing shook him. He's like, all right, I'm going to grow a goatee and wear these glasses and like dye my hair and no one will know I'm the Bounty Gate guy. It's like, that's not how it works. You still have the same name. Like everyone knows who you are. You're not tricking anyone into thinking like this is not a fake mustache situation, Greg.
Exactly. Right. You know who's even more crazier than Greg Williams? His son, Blake. Crazier.
Really? I don't know.
Like he should be on Hard Knocks or something real interesting.
Is it, do they have, so like Gase's father-in-law is Joe Vitt,
who
also slightly crazy.
He's on staff too. He's an advisor.
And that's what I'm saying. Like you got Greg Williams, Adam Gase, and Joe Vitt. That is a.
You got Blake Williams too. They're all there. Gang's all here.
No, I know that you can't. You're not allowed to talk about not having Hard Knocks someone other than L.A. because you know the NFL is a vast conspiracy to promote Los Angeles football. But why don't we have the Jets? Why don't we have the Jets? I want Gase on Hard Knocks. I want Greg Williams. I want Joe Vitt and Blake Williams. Give it to me. Come on.
You know what? I honestly think the next, like if they ever wanted to do, and I never want them to stop Hard Knocks. Let me be clear. But if they ever wanted to do like the most ultimate Hard Knocks, like maybe the finale, they should just pick like, there's like 10 or so people who would be fun to just watch, because some people are just like not that exciting, right? Like, or they have to like try hard to make them. Then there's other people who are just so like, Gase is very low key funny. Like I'm doing a lot with the Jets. I do have to do preseason and testing this analytics sideline thing with them last year. And then, you know, and like Gase is like, he's just funny. Like, I don't know if I'm laughing with him or at him, but I can say that because we're there, but
he's got like this weird, it's like it's hard to explain. Like the way that he's funny, but you don't know if he's
never know.
Yeah. You don't know if he's like, he thinks it's funny or if he does. It's very, anyway, we've gone off on a tangent, which is what?
Well, no, here's my last point on that. So, all right. When
I'm built on tangents, tangent away.
I like tangents. I'm from East Lansing, Michigan. Well, Okemos, next East Lansing. Nick Saban was the coach at Michigan State when I was there. Dean Pease was the defensive coordinator. Dean Pease's wife, Melly, was my volleyball coach.
Wow. So,
right? So I feel like I'm a Saban disciple, obviously. Absolutely. I've been coached by Saban ipso facto osmosisly. That's sure. The word. So Adam Gase was a college student at Michigan State when I was a high school student and I was taking math classes. We were in the same math class.
So. No way. Have you known each other? You know what I'm saying? Have you been in touch because you worked in the NFL? So like, do you know it? Or is it like, wait, were you in that math class? Or is it one of those things?
It was kind of like, well, I was like 15.
Right. So. Right. Yeah. And he's like, oh my God, this calculus sucks.
Well, I mean, it's just funny when like those, like life happens. Like,
of course. Right.
It's just very funny. So I feel, and he's one of the, first of all, the things that you, the only things I will say about Adam that everyone should know that nobody knows, like he is like a wonderful dad and he's a great girl dad, which.
Oh, that's cool.
It's so cool. And he's like, his kids wear like the quarterback like thing.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
During the games, if you ever see, they look up at the thing and they'll have the little playbooks and they'll have like actual plays, like not the ones they're going to run. Cause Adam is like paranoid that like Bill Belichick will somehow find it. But like
kidnap his kids and like take the armbands or something like that. Right.
But it's like, there's some plays on there with like the real things and the kids will be like, they'll be like, it's very cute. So it's really sweet. So he's a great girl dad, like supports his daughter's like gymnastics and all of this stuff. So I have to give credit where credit.
Sorry, Robbie, can you say hello?
Hello.
iPad has
how you doing?
Can you say hi to Miss Cynthia? That's like Miss Cynthia, like at school.
Hi.
Okay, good afternoon. I'll be downstairs in a second. I'm coming. I have to finish my podcast.
Oh my gosh, that just made my day.
All right, we'll go plug it in with the red cord. Okay. Well, I guess the podcast is over then, since Robbie has showed up. Yeah, sit down and be quiet.
For he's so cute.
Sorry, Cynthia. This happens on a regular basis. Hey.
Listen, it's the perils of working from home. I love it.
Ooh, does that feel good? All right, go downstairs. Count to 30. I'll be right there.
Count to 30.
You have 5% left. All right. Anyway, Cynthia, thank you so much. Awesome thank show. You. Great talk. I appreciate it. Sorry for the interruption here at the end. I'm sure.
Why? I love it.
Good go luck getting that, Debo. Follow her at C Freeland on Twitter. Watch her on NFL Game Day and check her out on NFL.com. Always a pleasure.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.